looking for. To put himself in a position of vulnerability. But the longer we stared at each other, the more rigid his posture became, until he was once again the hardened soldier I met on his first day at Solitude. I felt a sorrowful sense of loss, as if something rare and precious had disappeared before its value could even be realized. Have a nice night, Ella. I'll pick up Colt tomorrow for practice at 10. What? Soccer practice? Like the fight we'd had was something normal and could be glossed over. Like we hadn't just shoved a stick of dynamite between us and lit the fuse. Yep, soccer. Because I show up. That's what I do. When I make someone a promise, I follow through, and that goes double for your kids. And since you apparently won't take my word for it, I'm just going to have to show you over and over again. He opened the door, and Havoc jumped into the truck. Then he climbed in and left me standing on the front porch with my mouth hanging open, trying to figure out what the hell had just happened. Well, I asked Ada as I crammed another peanut butter cookie in my mouth. Colt and Maisie were asleep in our cabin, and Haley was keeping watch while I reverted back to my childhood and spilled my guts to Ada. What do you want me to say? She asked, taking another tray out of the commercial oven and setting it to cool. Your thoughts, opinions, anything. Because I needed someone else to tell me that I wasn't psycho. I think an extremely handsome man offered you a way to save your daughter. She leaned back against the opposite counter, wiping her hands clean on her apron. What? So I'm the one who's wrong here? He asked me to marry him, Ada. That gives a veritable stranger rights over my kids for the sake of insurance. Insurance that he can revoke anytime he feels like filing for divorce. Hell, rights over Solitude. Only if you let it. You're telling me you couldn't draft a prenup or something that limits his rights? The same as you'd do with Jeff if he walked back through those doors? Jeff isn't coming back. Exactly. What if he's a serial killer? I asked, reaching for another cookie. He was Ryan's best friend. So he says, I muttered with my mouth full. Well, so the letter said. Ryan had never shared personal details about the guys he served with. He barely told me anything about Chaos when he asked me to be his pen pal, just that a guy in his unit needed mail. I missed my brother. I wanted my brother. I needed to hear his opinion, why he'd never talked about Beckett if they'd been best friends. I missed Chaos, too. Chaos. If he'd shown up at my door in January, everything would be different. I knew it in my soul. Maybe I was the psycho one. After all, I'd fallen for two different men in the span of, what, 8 months? Pregnancy lasted longer than that. But Chaos was dead. Ryan was dead. Mom and Dad were dead. Grandma, dead too. Was I really going to add my daughter to that list? Didn't he have Ryan's letter? Yeah, I begrudgingly admitted. Maybe if there was a picture of them or something. Anything. Did you ask? She tilted her head and stared at me like I was 10 all over again. Well, no. Huh. Seems like you already believed him then, doesn't it? Ugh. I let my head roll back and sighed my exasperation to whoever wanted to take my side. You're on his side. I'm on Maisie's side, and that side looks a lot better when she's living. Well, when you put it like that. I don't know what to do. I can't marry him, Ada. It's only a matter of time before he gets bored. Guys like Beckett don't play house. He's not your father. He's not Ryan. He's not Jeff. You have got to stop convicting him of their crimes. She was right, and yet my heart still wouldn't accept it. My head wouldn't surrender. Even if he sticks around long enough to get Maisie through treatment, eventually he's going to check the saved Ryan's sister box and move on. And that's bad because it will break the kids' hearts. Funny thing about broken hearts, only the living have them. I shot her a glare. Yeah, I get it. At least she'd be alive to have a broken heart, right? But what if he walks out mid-treatment? What if the insurance cancels and the hospital ceases her therapy? Then she will have had more treatments than she's getting now. And we'll cross that bridge if we ever get there. Sometimes you just have to show a little faith, even if he is a veritable stranger. I don't know how to trust him with my kids. I reached for another cookie and broke it in half. That's a load of crap. She wagged her finger in my direction. You already trust him with the twins. He takes Colt to soccer, and he stayed with Maisie in the hospital with the privileges you gave him over her care. I shoved another piece of cookie in my mouth and chewed slowly. Ugh, she was right. Hadn't I already admitted to Beckett that I knew he'd do anything for the kids? You know what I think? Ada asked, taking advantage of my full mouth. You're not scared to trust him with the kids. You're scared to trust him with you. The cookie scraped my throat as I forced a quick swallow. What? I don't even factor into this. He said the marriage would just be on paper, which, okay, I could admit, had actually hurt a little. But you care about him. Too much. Any feelings I might or might not have don't matter. This isn't one of your Christmas romance movies where they fake marriage themselves out of a conundrum, break into snowball fights, and fall in love. There's no happy ever after here. Of course, that knowledge hadn't stopped me from falling for him anyway. Ella, it's June. There is no snow. You know what I'm talking about. Are you honestly going to sit there and tell me that you're going to draw a line on what you're willing to do to keep Maisie alive? And there was the kicker. Shit. What wouldn't I do for Maisie? With a cool enough head to get some perspective? I knew there wasn't a line. I'd risk hell and damnation for her. I'd sell my very soul. Beckett could potentially save Maisie. The only obstacle was my own stubbornness and fear. But what if there was a way to leave my fear out of the equation? To directly link Beckett to the kids without my baggage getting in the way? I guess I have to talk to Beckett. Colt flew through the front door after practice, flushed and happy. Hi, Mom! He was a blur, kissing me on the cheek and then racing up the stairs to his room. Beckett stood in the doorway, his baseball hat in his hand. His shorts rode low on his hips, and that incredible expanse of abs and chest was covered up with a Pearl Jam concert tee. His eyes widened when he took in my sundress and the bare expanse of my legs, but he quickly looked elsewhere. He has a game tomorrow, but I know Maisie is supposed to go in for chemo. We'll leave after the game. She doesn't start until Monday, and they'll need to see if her platelet levels are high enough to even do it. The infection screwed up a lot of stuff.
Okay, just let me know. I can take him, of course.
He started backing out of the house, and I nearly cursed. Thank you. Look, Beckett, about yesterday? He stopped, slowly dragging his eyes to mine and keeping them there instead of on my bare shoulders or the sweetheart strapless neckline I'd chosen just to get his attention. Sure, the dress was old, but at least it still fit. When it became apparent that he wasn't going to speak, I forged ahead. I trust you with my kids. His eyes widened slightly. I needed to say that first, for you to know that everything we fought about last night, most of that isn't about the kids. It's about me. You've done nothing but prove yourself since you got here, and it was wrong of me to ask you to tell me about Ryan, when I know it would cost your integrity. Ironic, really, right? I was asking you to prove your trustworthiness by breaking your word. I'm sorry.
Thank you, he answered quietly.
There's someone I'd like to have dinner with tonight.
His eyes narrowed.
With you, I quickly corrected. Dinner with you and the someone.
You want me to chaperone a date?
His voice dropped to that low, sandpaper rough tone that woke up my body in parts that had been asleep since Jeff. No. I want to meet with my lawyer, and I'm hoping you'll go with me. About... I glanced over to where Maisie was napping on the couch. What you offered yesterday. Kind of. Surprise widened his eyes for a second, and I savored the reaction. I didn't have many opportunities to shock Beckett.
Kind of?
Hope flashed in his eyes, catapulting my heart into my throat. I want to ask some questions first before I say anything. I don't even know if what I'm thinking about is possible. But I'd be really grateful if you went with me to figure it out.
Of course. What time?
I looked at the clock and then forced a smile. In about 45 minutes? Instead of scoffing or snipping that it was too short notice, he simply nodded, saying,
okay,
and walked out. I used the time to pack a little for our trip, force Colt into the bathtub, and throw dinner for the kids into the oven. I took Maisie's temp when she woke up and sighed in relief at the beautiful 98.5 reading as Ada arrived. Then I generally puttered in nervousness before putting on what little makeup I had, which meant a swipe of mascara and a little lip gloss. Not that this was a date or anything. Beckett arrived exactly a half hour after he'd departed, his scruff shaved off, smelling like soap and leather and him.
Ready?
He asked, after hugging both the kids. Yep, I said, grabbing my purse on a white cardigan. We walked down the steps, and he opened my door for me. At the moment, in his dress pants, open-collared shirt, and dark blue blazer, he looked more gentleman than special ops soldier, but I knew it was just icing. He might look all fluffy and frosted, but under the clothes, he was devil's food, period. And I really, really, really liked chocolate. I climbed up into the truck, and he shut the door, but not before he let his eyes linger on my legs for a moment longer than necessary. Good choice on the heels. Our drive into Telluride was quiet, accompanied by only a little classic rock streaming through the speakers.
This was Ryan's favorite,
he said quietly, catching me off guard.
Used to drive me nuts with it.
Thunderstruck. Yeah, it was, I agreed. Did he still play
a wicked air guitar?
Beckett asked with a smile.
Oh yeah, every chance he got. Between this and Poison, I've had my fill of watching him finger-pick at nothing. Did he ever tell you we got to meet Brett Michaels?
What? No way!
Check the glove box.
He motioned with his head, and I eagerly fumbled with the latch until it opened.
Under the manual.
I pulled out a white envelope, thick and distorted with pictures.
I think it's about halfway through.
I flipped through the pictures, seeing Beckett all over the world, with other soldiers like him, like Ryan. Until I looked closer and saw that it was Ryan in a group photo. My breath caught, and I ran my thumb over his familiar face, an all-too-familiar ache settling in my chest. I miss him, I said quietly.
Me too.
His knuckles whitened on the steering wheel.
It's a good thing, though. Missing him. Grief means you had someone worth grieving.
I found a picture where the soldiers were three rows deep, all camoed and bearded. For just that second, I let myself wonder, and before I knew it, my mouth opened. Which one is chaos? Beckett's head snapped toward mine as we reached a red light, and I felt a split second of guilt. Did Beckett know how chaos had felt about me, or the way I'd felt about him? His gaze dropped to the photo.
He's third from the left.
I searched the picture, hungry for my first sight of chaos as we pulled into a parking spot in front of the restaurant. There was Beckett, serious as always.
There are two other soldiers three rows in.
Both had thick, short beards and sunglasses on. The driver's side door shut. Beckett had already killed the ignition and gotten out of the truck.
I guess that subject's closed, I muttered,
examining the faces one last time before sliding them back in the envelope with a heavy heart. Would I ever get to look again? Ever get the chance to ask questions? I put the pictures back into the glove box just before Beckett opened my door and helped me down. Heels and running boards weren't always the easiest combo. Then we walked into the restaurant, a little family-owned Italian place I loved. When we reached our table, Mark was already waiting and stood.
Whoa, Gutierrez?
Beckett asked, as Mark came around the table and kissed my cheek.
Nice to see you, gentry. Shall we sit?
Beckett held out my chair, and I took it, scooting in. It was an almost archaic gesture, but it made me feel protected, cared for, and a little off balance.
So you don't just run the rescue crew,
Beckett said, as the men took their seats.
Nope, I'm just a volunteer. Keeps me on my toes, and it's not like there's a ton of family law business here in Telluride.
He shrugged.
Kinda like you. Just doing it for fun now.
Beckett nodded slowly. So I guess you two know each other, I said lightly, even though the moment felt anything but. Thank you, Mark, for meeting us on a Saturday night. I know you and Tess have date night.
No problem. She's actually in Durango for the weekend with the kids. Trust me, I'd much rather be here with you than having dinner with my mother-in-law. Now, what's up?
Want to fill him in on your proposal? I asked Beckett, and he took the reins. It took a glass of wine and all of dinner, but he explained everything as thoroughly as possible, from the treatments, the bills, the insurance, to his idea of marriage. Ella Gentry. I mentally smacked that picture out of my mind. I'd gotten married on a whim once, and a second time was definitely not in the cards. I didn't care how good his name sounded attached to mine.
Do you want to marry Ella?
He asked Beckett as the waitress cleared our plates.
Would you want to marry a woman who had no interest in marrying you?
Beckett answered. My head snapped to look at him. No interest? It wasn't lack of interest in Beckett. It was an overwhelming interest in my sanity and logic.
But I would, if that's what she needed,
Beckett finished. Great, now I was the damsel. All I needed was a giant light-up sign above my head that flashed with the words, in distress, and my life would be complete.
Okay, then let's not push that option,
Mark said, his gaze flickering between the two of us.
No one wants an arranged marriage here. So, Ella, now that I have a good idea of what's going on, it's your turn. On the phone, you mentioned an idea?
Right. I pivoted in my chair to look at Beckett. What you're offering is to basically make Maisie your daughter, right? Even if it's only on paper?
Yes. Colt, too, as my son, obviously. Legally.
Just the words sent a spiraling warmth through my belly. Or maybe that was the wine. Either way, it gave me the courage to continue. I'm a little damaged. He quirked an eyebrow as if to say, tell me something I don't know.
And sometimes that damage blinds me. It gets in my way and holds me back, and I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay with it hurting Maisie or Colt. So if there was a way for you to be their legal father, giving them all the same protections that being my husband would, without me being your wife, would you want that?
Not marrying you?
His brows drew inward. Removing me and my damage from the equation. I clarified before dropping my volume to a whisper only Beckett could hear. As someone wise once told me, it's not about not wanting you.
I don't understand.
Would you want the kids if I wasn't part of the deal?
Yes,
he answered without hesitation. Forever?
Always.
That warmth in my stomach spread, combining with the love that burned so brightly in my chest. I half expected to light up like a Care Bear. I forced my eyes away from Beckett's to where Mark sat, his gaze darting between us, his mind already at work. Can he adopt them without marrying me? Beckett drew in a sharp breath.
Is that something you'd be willing to do?
Mark asked Beckett.
Yes.
Again, the answer came instantly.
Have you thought about what that would really mean?
Mark asked me. Yes, I know it puts the kids at some risk. I felt Beckett tense next to me, like a crackle of energy in the air.
It could, Mark agreed. It would be like having another parent. There would be support to consider, visitation, custody rights, both physical and decision-making. It's basically sharing your kids with him. But it protects them more, too. The moment he adopts them, they'll be covered by his insurance no matter the status of your relationship. The military will always see them as his.
Even if he's out? Beckett's jaw tensed.
Yep. You could even sue me for support if you wanted.
I would never sue you for support.
I wouldn't care if you did.
Right, but you're still giving up a portion of your rights, Ella.
My hackles bristled. The twins had always been mine and only mine. Can we lessen the risk?
He leaned back, continuing his appraisal of us both. Sure. You just have to draw up a custody agreement to be signed immediately after. You could say that you have sole physical custody, he has zero rights to visitation, but you should share decision-making, or it looks pretty darn fraudulent. You wouldn't even have to file it unless there's an issue, just in case someone comes looking.
Is it fraud? I needed to know. I'd probably still go through with it. Maisie's life was worth some jail time. But I had to know. I mean, the marriage would seem way more fraudulent to me. If neither of us want to marry the other and we're living in separate houses with separate names, then that's more fraud than Beckett wanting to be there for the kids, right?
Do you want to parent the kids?
Mark looked straight at Beckett.
Yes,
he answered without a second thought.
I love them. Nothing would make me happier than to protect them like this, to give them whatever I can.
You're going to have to do a little better than that with Judge Iverson. He's a softie for Ella, always has been. But you're not a local. He's not going to trust you just because you showed up for some soccer practices.
Beckett took a deep breath and toyed with his glass.
I didn't have a father growing up. A lot of guys who hit first or just generally ignored me, but no one I considered a dad. When Colt and I were walking back across the field after a soccer game, he asked if that was what having a dad felt like. And I couldn't tell him yes because I didn't know. And he didn't know either. I want Colt and Maisie to know what it feels like to have a dad, in whatever capacity Ella would let me be there for them. I just want to be the guy they can depend on.
That's pretty much the definition of fatherhood. And I think you'd hold up just fine in court. It's not fraud if you are adopting so that you can help raise them. The insurance is definitely a perk, though. one that Judge Iverson would see. But he lost his wife to cancer about 10 years back, so I honestly think you've got a good shot that he'd choose to see it as just that. A perk, and not the reason. Would the lack of rights bother you?
He shook his head.
Maisie dying bothers me. I would never take anything from Ella that she didn't want to give, and I would never do anything that would hurt the kids.
I thought of the pictures the nurses had shown me of the little graduation ceremony that Beckett had given Maisie. She loved him. Colt loved him just as much, and I was right there with him. They already had so much to lose when it came to Beckett.
Would they have to know? Right away, at least, I blurted out.
He could absolutely hurt the kids the minute he walked away. To give them a dad just to take him away was cruel. Once Maisie was in the clear, hoping Beckett was still content in Telluride that far in the future, we could tell them. Once her heart was strong enough to withstand the potential fallout of the opposite being true. Beckett went stiff, but his gaze stayed steady and unwavering in Mark's direction. Mark's eyes shifted between us.
I guess not. Kids don't have to be informed or give consent until they're 12. We'd just have to talk to Judge Iverson. Seeing how he's always favored you, and his hatred of the Danburys, well, I think we could sway him to agree.
So we could really do it? I asked, that tiny flame of hope flaring up again, even though we're not married.
Marriage might be the easier route, Mark said with a shrug.
I just can't. Not after what happened last time. I'm in no rush to get a ring on it.
Which is exactly what you should tell Judge Iverson if he asks. Our definition of family has changed a ton in the last couple of decades, and marriage isn't the determining factor anymore. And since you're the children's mother, and they're not wards of the state or anything, the only complication would really be Judge Iverson's opinion. A single man can absolutely adopt his partner's children without them being married. You guys just might have to play up the partner part a little.
My cheeks warmed. I hadn't had a partner since Jeff, and he wasn't really ever that anyway. So basically, I'd be trading my sole decision-making rights. And that's it?
Basically.
He fiddled with his wine glass as he watched us, his eyes seeing way too much.
But you'd be gaining Maisie's life. Beckett answered. And you know I'd never do anything that would cross you when it came to the kids. I'm not some villain. I'm just trying to help.
I know, I said softly. And I did. But trust wasn't something I handed out like candy.
There's one catch. You're going to have to get Jeff to sign over his parental rights.
Pretty sure a nuclear bomb going off would have had less impact on my heart.
Why? He's not on the birth certificate, and the kids are Mackenzie's, not Danbury's.
Ella, everyone knows Jeff is the father. Whether or not you admit it on the birth certificate doesn't eliminate his rights. One paternity test and the adoption would be voided. I'm not saying he'd ever exercise his rights, but the judge is going to require the release. No release, no adoption.
Right.
I replied, my voice almost mouse-like. I didn't want to see Jeff, ever. That was like ripping open a fully healed scar just for fun. We thanked Mark, Beckett paid for dinner, and we left, riding back to the house in a tense silence.
What way are you leaning?
Beckett asked as we pulled through Solitude's gate.
The way that doesn't require me seeing Jeff. I slammed my eyes shut.
That's a lie. I know what you're offering is a godsend, not just for Maisie, but for Colt. For me. I just can't bear the idea of having to ask him for anything.
I'll handle Jeff, Beckett promised. Besides, he'd probably run screaming if you showed up. At least I can blindside him.
You'd do that for me? I asked as we reached my cabin,
the truck coming to a soft stop.
I would do anything for you.
His eyes locked onto mine in the dashboard lights, intense and a little hurt.
What is it going to take for you to believe me? To trust me? You want my background checked? Do it. You want my credit score? Awesome. My bank accounts? I'll add you on. You have my word, my body, my time, and I'm standing here offering my last name. What else can I give you?
Beckett, I leaned toward him, but he backed away.
Not that you'd ever give them my last name. Not when they don't even get to know what we're doing. Right? I can be their legal father, but I'm not good enough to be their dad.
That's not what this is about.
Oh, I know. It's that you don't trust me to stay. You think I'll walk out just like Jeff did. You think it will hurt the kids even more.
I figured we could tell them once Maisie was healthy.
If I'm still around by then, right?
I hated and loved that he knew me so well. I didn't even have to answer. He saw it in my eyes.
Yeah. Okay.
He killed the engine and removed the keys.
I don't even have the right to be upset. I know what I'm offering, and the being dad part isn't in there, right? Just the legal protection. You need something, I'm giving it to you, just like I promised I would. Simple as that.
He opened the door and got out of the truck. I followed quickly after, watching his back retreat down my driveway, toward the lake.
What are you doing?
Leaving my truck here. I'll get it tomorrow before the game. The walk will do me good.
Beckett!
I called after him.
Don't worry, Ella, he called back. I know my role. I've got it, and I'll still show up. That's how badly I want.
He didn't finish, just threw up his hands and kept walking. But I finished that sentence for him in my head about a dozen different ways. How badly I want you, how badly I want your kids, how badly I want to be in your life, how badly I want to show up for you, how badly I want Maisie to live. Every single one I came up with made me feel worse for not trusting him. But the guy was up against a lifetime of people making promises and leaving me. And I was up against a lifetime of no one trusting him. Weren't we just a pair?
Chapter 16. Beckett.
Letter number 15. Chaos, I'm so sorry you lost someone. I can't imagine how hard that must be, to grieve and still carry on with what you're doing. Every time I lost someone, my parents or my grandmother, it always shut me down. Like my body couldn't process the enormity of my feelings. It says a lot about the kind of man you are that you can continue to show up, and I mean that in the best of ways. You say you're bad with people, that you don't connect, but that's not who I see when I open these letters. Or rather, who I hear. Someone who can't connect wouldn't be so open. Heck, they wouldn't have written back in the first place. But you did. And I'm grateful. Maybe you simply choose who you connect with. And that's okay. I don't think anyone wakes up and decides to be the social butterfly like my brother. That's probably why you two are good friends. You balance each other out. You know who else I bet you'd connect with? Kids. Maybe not everyone's kids, but definitely your own. Have you ever thought about kids? It's a random question, but I'm curious. Probably because I had mine so young, and I can't imagine not having them. I kind of picture everyone I meet with kids. Except Haley. She's one of my closest friends, and I'm sure one day she'll make a great mom, after she successfully adults on her own for a while. Successful being the key word there. I bet you'll love her when you get here. She's gorgeous and fun, and doesn't picture everyone she meets with kids. Anyway, I bet you'd be a great dad. Brooding and tough, but also sneaking in Star Wars marathons on lazy weekends.
I could absolutely picture it. If I could picture you. Yep, I'm still hankering for a picture. I hope I managed to distract you for a few minutes. I hope you know how very sorry I am for your loss. Ella.
I stood at the window of the downtown Denver high-rise, looking out over the city. This definitely wasn't a place I could set down roots. 2 months in Telluride had taught me that concrete and I weren't compatible in the long-term sense. Plus, Denver didn't have Ella. It had been a week since our fight in the truck, and we'd been polite, even friendly. But that easygoing rhythm we'd always had was nowhere to be found, not with everything hanging between us. If I wasn't careful, she'd realize I was in love with her, and then we'd be in even deeper shit. I'd never had a woman prick my temper the way Ella did. Hell, I'd sworn at her. I'd also never had a woman I cared to see more than once or twice, or one who owned my soul the way she did. Of course, I'd agree to whatever terms she had when it came to the adoption, not just because I was desperate to save Maisie and protect Colt, but because I'd give Ella whatever she wanted if it simply made her smile. And in return, she was giving me a family, as screwed up as the justification was. The kids would be mine, in every way that mattered to me. I could love them, protect them, make sure they had everything they needed. I'd get Maisie approved for every treatment and make sure Colt knew I had his back every day of his life. I'd prove myself to Ella, show up until she couldn't doubt me ever again, and then I'd win her heart. Until she finds out what you did. Yeah, that. It didn't matter how hard I tried to ignore it. My secret hung over my head like a guillotine. At least the kids would be protected when Ella kicked me out. It wasn't like she'd unadopt the kids or risk Maisie. This was the one way I could fulfill my promise to Ryan and placate my aching heart, knowing one day the past was going to catch up to me. My cell phone dinged and I swiped to open the message app. Donahue. Updated papers are ready with new dates. You sure about this? My fingers paused over the keys. I was sure that I wanted Maisie to live, and this was the only means to that end. Me. Yep, but it doesn't mean I'm coming back. Donahue, you keep telling yourself that. I slid my phone into my pocket, not bothering to reply. Mr. Gentry? A voice called out from behind me and I turned around. Mr. Danbury, I answered. So this was Jeff. He basically looked like an overgrown frat boy who'd been poured into his father's suit. His hair was blonde and slicked back, his eyes gray and calculating. We shook hands and I quickly took my seat across from him at the conference table, scared that I'd lose it and crush him for having touched Ella, let alone abandoning her and the kids. The hell with him. He didn't deserve her, and he sure as hell didn't deserve them. He adjusted his suit coat and I did the same, unbuttoning the bottom button. At least Denver had good fast tailors. So what can I do for you, Mr. Gentry? He asked. I understand you're the youngest junior partner at your firm. I am. Just graduated law school, as a matter of fact. Perks of having a dad with his name on the wall? I asked, motioning to the firm's name. His smile fell. Jeffy boy didn't like having a silver spoon brought up. Guys like him were all the same. They'd had their cushy lives handed to them, and they despised any speed bump that kept them from the prize. God knew he'd run right over Ella. I consider it part ownership in the family business, he said with a shrug. Ah, family. I'm so glad you brought that up. I pushed the manila envelope across the table and he caught it. What the hell is this? He asked, scanning the paper. You know what it is, unless that fancy law degree didn't teach you how to read. Sign it. He read it again and then put it down slowly. Then I saw it. The look that said he thought he had one up on me now that he knew what I wanted. What did Ella pay you to do this? I'm sorry. There has to be a reason. It's been years. There is. I'm adopting the twins. His smirk fell off his preppy face, and his gaze dropped to my hand, looking for a ring. You're marrying her? I can't see how that's any of your business. Well, seeing as you'd like to adopt my kids. All emotion drained from my body in a familiar retreat. The sensation the same as every time I stepped into combat, preparing me to commit unforgivable atrocities. They're not your kids, I said. Yeah, I'd beg to differ on that, considering how many times I screwed her in the last 2 months we were married. Small-town girl with a small-town mind just wanted a ring first. If Havoc had been here, she would have gone for his throat based on my tension level alone. You might be the biological father, but you're sure as hell not their dad. You've never so much as seen them, spoke to them, or had any interaction. They are not your kids. They're mine. As soon as the words left my mouth, that sweet pressure was back in my chest, the love I had for them overpowering my instinct to void my emotions. So what exactly is in this for me? Are you serious? He shrugged. Consider it a business transaction. You want something I have. What are you going to give me for it? How about I tell you what I'm not going to give you? He sat there expectantly while I did my best to keep a level head. Three things. Maisie, Colt, Ella, they were the reason and the only things that mattered. I'm not going to give you the over $2 million bill for Maisie's cancer treatments that's going to come due in the next year. He swallowed, but showed no other outward sign of hearing me. Reason enough? Or we can just add her to your insurance since you're so keen on calling them yours. I'm sure that would go over really well with your dad, considering he told Ella about 6 months ago that he really didn't care if Maisie lived or died as long as she left him and you the hell alone. I'm sure that would be great for business if it got out. Is that a threat? Not in the least. Why would I do that when you're going to sign that release and your little secretary outside is going to notarize it all nice and pretty? I leaned back in my chair. Fine, I'll sign it. He ripped a pen out of the cup in the center of the table and scrawled his name across the paper. I didn't relax. Not yet. Have it notarized. He cursed under his breath but pushed back from the table and barked for his secretary from the doorway. A 20-something woman in a tight pencil skirt hustled over, signing the bottom of the document and stamping it before running back to her desk. Jeff shoved the folder at me and I looked over the document, making sure it had been signed and notarized correctly. I wasn't doing this a second time. Now, if there's anything else, I let my smile loose. Yeah, get your checkbook. Excuse me? His eyes popped wide in indignation. Get your checkbook. You're going to write Ella a check for 6 years of back support on the kids, now. The hell I am. Besides, I just started working last month. What do you want? 30% of nothing? Yeah, but your $1 million trust fund kicked in the minute you attended your first class freshman year of college, so you're going to write a lovely, fat check to Ella. How did you know that? Not important. You're going to write what you owe her, or I'm going to take this document to your fiancé's dad. What is he, a senator? And then I'm going to leak it to the press that you not only abandoned those kids, but you left their mother destitute while she struggled to afford the cancer treatments Maisie needs. How do you think that's going to play out in the press? You'd ruin me. I took a deep, steadying breath. Even knowing that Maisie had cancer didn't affect this selfish prick. Yeah, that's the idea. Why? Because I ruined Ella? Like she had a future anyway. You think you ruined Ella? There's no man on the planet who could do that. Don't flatter yourself. The only reason she's not here is because you're not worth her time. Now get your checkbook. He left the conference room, returning quickly with his pen poised over an open checkbook. How much? Whatever you think it's worth to keep your future father-in-law happy and your father's name on the wall. He scrawled his pen across the check and then flung the paper at me. The check rustled to a gentle stop right in front of me, and I took it, folding it in half and slipping it into my breast pocket. You're not even going to look at it? He squawked. Nope, it's either enough or it's not. I stood, buttoning my suit coat, and headed for the door, file in hand. How did you know about the trust fund? He asked again, still seated. I paused, my hand on the door, debating. What the hell, why not? Oh, you know, small-town people with small-town minds, they have big hearts and bigger mouths. And just for the record, the best thing you've ever done in your life is walk away from Ella. You never came back to mess with the kids. I'd keep to that tradition if I were you. I protect what's mine. I walked away without a second thought, heading for a little army base just outside of Denver. There was another set of papers that needed signing today. Beckett! Colt flew through the door and launched himself into my arms, like I'd been gone 2 weeks instead of 2 days. What's up, little man? I lifted him into the air, savoring the smell of cinnamon and sunshine as I shuffled the folder in my hands. We're baking! I carried him into the house and was greeted by the same scent. Apple pie? I asked. How did you know? Well, the only thing that smells that good while it's baking is apple pie or little boy pie, and since you're still here, I went with the apples. Havoc swirled around my legs in greeting, and I set Colt down to give my girl a little behind-the-ear rub. Good job, I told her, knowing she'd stuck by Colt's side. Beckett! Maisie called out from the couch. How's my best girl? I asked, coming around to crouch next to where she lay. She was pale, her skin nearly translucent. Feeling okay? She shook her head. If you could get her to drink something, I'd pretty much fork over my soul, Ella said, coming from the kitchen, a smattering of flour on her forehead. A pang of yearning blended with pure lust. I wanted this life and this woman. Wanted the freedom to steal her away from the kids for a second and get my hands on her, kiss her, touch her, watch her eyes flutter shut in pleasure, watch the worry lines fade from her brow. Apple pie, huh? It's your favorite, so I thought maybe... She shrugged. What do I have to bribe you with to get a few capfuls of Gatorade down you? I asked Maisie. She looked up at me, those blue eyes turning deadly serious. No more Moana. Get me Star Wars. It's not scary. She shot a little glare in Ella's direction. Ella scoffed, but nodded to okay the transaction. Deal. I have the green apple flavor you like at my house. Give me a couple minutes with your mom and I'll get it, okay? Deal. I pulled her blanket up a little farther and followed Ella into her office. You are enough. The handwritten sign I'd sent her hung on the bulletin board. Hell yes, she was enough. I was the one who lacked in just about every department, including the honesty one. How weird was it to be jealous of yourself, to know another version of you had a piece of the woman you loved? How are her platelet levels? We're going into the medical center tomorrow morning for another transfusion. They can do it in Telluride, so at least it's close. I nodded and handed Ella the folder. Her fingers trembled a little, but she opened it. Then her mouth dropped open. You did it. I did. You're free. The kids are free. How? She read it again. I'm very convincing. She grinned up at me. That, I believe. I slipped the check into the folder, letting it fall on top of the document. Her mouth fell open. What is this? What you're owed? She sat back, her butt perched on the edge of her desk. It's $500,000. Why would he... What did you do? Got you a little of the money he should have given you all along. She looked up at me, her face a myriad of expressions I couldn't keep up with. I don't want it. I figured. You did? I nodded. You raised them on your own. I figured the last thing you'd do is take the money now. That would give him a feeling of ownership you'd never allow.
Then why did you bring it?
You said once that to hurt him, I had to hit the money. So I hurt him. I brought you the check because I won't ever take a choice like that from you. That money could pay off all the debt on Solitude, or pay for treatments for Maisie, or for their college in the future. I wasn't taking that choice.
I don't need it for Maisie now.
Not if you want me to adopt her, you don't. That's another choice I won't force on you. I'm not Jeff. And this gives you options. That check means you're not cornered. You don't have to choose me. We stood there, our eyes locked in a silent conversation as she considered. Mine begged her to trust me, to lean on me, to need me even a small percentage of the way I needed her. Hers pondered, weighed, and decided, staying locked with mine as she ripped the check to shreds.
I choose you, and now I'm free. We're free.
I grinned because I knew I wasn't free anymore. I was hers. Theirs. Chapter 17. Beckett.
Letter number 3. Chaos? Parenthood sucks. Sorry. I know we don't know each other well enough for me to say something like that, but it does. At least today it does. I just spent the better part of my afternoon in the principal's office. Not only that, but it was the same principal from when I was a kid. I swear, I sat down in that squeaky pleather chair across from his desk, and I was 7 all over again. Except now I'm the adult. and my kids are the ones putting me in the hot seat. Colt and Maisie are in the same kindergarten class. I know I got a ton of crap about putting twins in the same class and how it doesn't let them cultivate their own identity, but those so-called experts never had to look at my blue-eyed heathens and listen to them refuse to be separated. And by refuse, I mean we tried. For the first week of school, I had to pick them up every day by 9 a.m., because they kept leaving to go to the other's classroom. Finally, we relented. You know the phrase, pick your battles? It was more like, concede the war, you're losing. But fine. Anyway, there's a little boy with a huge crush on Maisie. Cute, right? Not so much. Today at recess, he decided the whole class would play kiss tag, where I guess instead of tagging someone with your hand, you plant one on them. Nice, right? Maisie didn't want to play, so the boy started chasing her anyway, eventually tripping her and kissing her despite her objections. Naturally, she shoved him off and decked him. My brother would be proud. She landed that punch just like he taught her. Colt heard the commotion and went running. When Maisie told him what happened, he kept cool, but the other little boy called her a not-nice name that rhymes with witch, according to Colt. And, well, Colt went ballistic. The other boy has a black eye and a mouthful of playground sand. Did I mention I went to school with his mom? Super awkward small-town life. Colt has a week of detention, which Maisie is demanding she serve with him. They're 5 years old. 5 years old, Chaos. This is kindergarten. How the hell am I going to survive the teen years? Ugh. That's all for today. Parenting sucks. Ella.
My alarm went off and I was up and running. Literally, I hit the 6 mile mark along the Solitude grounds, showered and went into work, which was now completely volunteer-based since I signed Donahue's papers. There, I ran havoc through some drills and worked her on the rappelling harness. It was a pretty typical Friday. Except today was adoption day, and that changed everything. Jeff had signed the papers a little over a month ago, and we found out a few days ago that today was the day. Every day had been a grueling wait, but my insurance had let me enroll the kids based on the pending adoption paperwork, which meant in 2 weeks, they would be covered, and in a month, Maisie could get her first MIBG therapy. I parked the truck in front of the main house, and Havoc and I nodded to the new guests as we walked inside. The summer was bustling with business, and Ella was busy tending to customers and placating the picky ones. I guess the words luxury accommodations was the signal for assholes to emerge from the general population. Oh, look, she was dealing with another one. Havoc and I waited just inside the double doors as a woman in her mid-50s was shaking her head at Ella.
And that's just not what we're looking for. I specifically asked for lakeside, and we're facing a very lovely view, but it's certainly not water.
Ella looked over the woman's shoulder at me mid-lecture, and I sent her a consoling look. At least I hoped it was consoling, because she almost giggled. She motioned with her head toward the back, and I took the cue. I walked Havoc through the main house, spotting Haley at the desk, and Ada in her glory, putting fresh-baked cookies on the table. We made our way to the back and opened the door to the residence.
Beckett!
Maisie came running around the corner, and I caught her before she skidded into the wall.
You have to help me. Colt has the best hiding place, and I can't find him. It's not fair. He can run faster, and he knows it.
It was amazing what a month of chemo had done for her energy level. How long have you been looking?
Forever!
She dragged out the word to make sure I understood exactly how long forever was. I gave her a look, and she relented.
20 minutes?
Man, that is forever, I agreed. Want to find him super quick?
Yes.
She jumped up and down. Ready? I asked her as I stood.
Yes,
she repeated, still jumping. Man, if I could bottle that energy, I would be a very rich man. Havoc, sit. Havoc sat, looking up at me for my next command. She'd heard the tone and knew it was time to work. Plus, I wanted to experiment a little. Seek Colt. She was off like a shot, sniffing the ground around the living room, the dining room, and then bolting up the stairs. You'd better follow her, Maisie. Maisie took off at a dead run just as Ella opened the door, quickly stepped inside and shut it. Then she leaned back against the wood, letting her shoulders sag. "Was that my daughter impersonating a track star?" she asked, her tone more than tired. "It was. She's with Havoc. Apparently she feels that Colt used his health as an unfair advantage in the hide-and-seek game, so I'm leveling the playing field." Right on time, Havoc barked, and there was a small thud and a series of loud laughs. "Not fair, that's cheating," Colt yelled. There was an avalanche of footfalls down the stairs, and the three of them appeared in the hallway. "Good girl," I told Havoc, who trotted over to accept the last treat I had in my pocket from our earlier session.
"Can we go outside, please?"
Maisie asked. Ella bit her lip. "Please," Colt begged, making it the longest word on earth.
"Okay, just stay away from the guests and be safe," Ella relented. "And take a hat."
"Havoc, stay with Colt and Maisie." The trio ran out the back door before Ella could change her mind.
"It's like having her back," Ella said with a sigh. "Off the chemo, she's so energetic and happy and has a great appetite. With her levels up, she can just be a kid for a second. I'm glad we have this month before the MIBG treatment."
"Me too." Ella pushed off the door and walked to the window, pulling the curtain aside to watch the kids play in the field just behind the house.
"I never worry about Havoc with them. Is that weird? I saw her go all growly on Jeff's parents, and I still don't worry."
I came up next to her, our shoulders touching, watching Havoc leap and chase the toy Colt had thrown. I told her to protect them. Usually I say to stay with them, but we were on the street and I said protect. She'd still kill anyone who messed with them right now, but not a kid or a guest or someone who didn't have that tension she picks up on. When I say protect, that puts her on alert. Right now she's just playing with them.
"She's amazing."
"She's changed a lot since we left the unit. While she was working, she was kenneled, trained, handled by me, but she didn't really get dog time. Even on deployments, she slept with me, worked with me, and never left my side. But still, no real dog time. Here she works, but she's learned to be safe with the kids and the guests."
"She's domesticating," Ella said with a smile, then nudged my shoulder. "Like someone else I know."
I laughed. "You ready for this afternoon?"
"Yeah," she said with an enthusiastic nod. "How about you?"
Nervous, humbled, happy in sheer awe of the level of responsibility that comes with tiny humans. She looked up at me with tired but happy eyes.
"Says every new father ever."
"I wouldn't know."
"Me either. Guess we'll figure it out together. Hard to believe this was our home. I'm so used to living in the cabin now."
"Think you'll return once it's safe for Maisie?"
"I honestly don't know. I really like living at the cabin and having that privacy, that line between home and work. Living here, I was always at work."
She rubbed her forehead with her fingers and then tightened her ponytail. "You okay? I mean, don't smack me for male stupidity, but you look a little tired."
She turned around, sitting on the window seat. "That's because I am tired. Maybe it's because Maisie only has scans this month, so my brain can take a little break from the normal insanity, and everything else just catches up."
"What can I do?"
"You're adopting my kids today so my daughter doesn't die. I think that fulfills every requirement you could ever dream up."
"I'm not just doing it for Ryan." I started, but stopped when the door to the residence opened and Haley raced in, her cheeks flushed and her eyes bright.
"Connor Williamson just asked me out," she exclaimed.
"No way."
Ella jumped up.
"Right? I've only been crushing on him since when? The ninth grade?"
She spun in the middle of the floor, her arms outstretched.
"Connor Williamson asked me out."
Ella laughed.
"I'm so happy for you."
Haley ran over and hugged her.
"This is it. I just know it. He's going to fall madly in love with me, and we're going to get married and have babies, and it's going to be perfect."
"Yeah, it is," Ella agreed. I saw something twist in her face, like her joy had somehow morphed into a panic-laced sorrow.
"Is it okay if I take off an hour early tomorrow?"
she asked, pulling back with her hands on Ella's shoulders.
"Totally."
Ella forced a smile, and I might have believed it if I hadn't seen her slip.
"Thanks."
Haley squeezed Ella again and danced away, spinning for good measure near the door and leaving. "Ella," I said softly, stepping in front of her so she couldn't run away.
"What?"
She shrugged and tried her damnedest to fake a smile, but her bottom lip trembled. What's going on? And don't say nothing. I gently took her shoulders in my hands. She shrugged. I'm fine. Ella, in 5 hours we're about to share children. And yeah, I get it. I'm not really their dad, just the insurance provider. But don't you think we have to be able to be honest with each other? The good, the bad, the exhausted.
She's so excited.
Her voice was a whisper. Yes.
And I can't remember what that feels like anymore, to get that excited, to be asked out on a date. I mean, it's been 7 years. 7, Beckett.
She clasped my biceps, her nails no doubt leaving half moons in my skin.
I'm pretty sure my virginity has regrown. That's how long it's been.
Yeah, I don't think that's how that works.
And I love my life. I love Colt and Maisie and this business. I'm proud of my choices, you know? I'm proud of them.
Her voice pitched upward. As you should be.
And everything with Maisie, that's all I think about lately. I mean, it's July, right? So it's been 9 months since she was diagnosed. 9 months. And I will do anything to make sure she lives.
Like, let me adopt her. I interjected, thinking it would help.
Exactly. Like find the sexiest, most infuriating, addictive man I've ever set eyes on and then shove him not into the friend zone, but the brother's friend zone, and then catapult him into the daddy zone where, get this, he's still untouchable.
A rush of heat slammed through my body. I'd done so well keeping my hands to myself since our almost disaster on the couch. I'd run 6 miles a day, taken cold showers, swam in the lake, you name it, all with the intention of keeping my hands off Ella. And with one tirade, she had me teetering on the edge of self-control. It had been almost a year since I'd had sex, and my body was reminding me in a very hard, very painful way that the only woman I wanted was standing in front of me, complaining that I was in the friend zone. Okay, stop. You didn't shove me into the friend zone. I put myself there. And the daddy zone, too. That's on me, not on you.
Then you're stupid, she yelled,
her eyes alight with acutest indignation.
I mean, the friend zone, not the dad stuff.
You're so cute. Her eyes narrowed. Oh, damn, wrong choice of words.
Cute? I'm cute? No, that's the issue. I haven't had my hair cut in a year. Do you know how that feels? It's not the hair. I'm not that vain. It's the time, Beckett. The time it takes to invest in yourself as a woman. And I'm not a woman anymore. I abandoned my makeup, my Sunday night candle baths. I haven't slept a full night since Maisie's diagnosis, and I've been stuck wearing pants for a month because I haven't shaved my legs.
I like you in pants.
That's not the point. It's July, Beckett. July is for shorts and hikes and suntans and being kissed under the moonlight. And I'm in jeans with no kisses, and my legs look like a yeti somewhere in the Himalayas lent me his coat.
Well, that's really visual. Don't laugh. Do not laugh. Oh yeah, those nails were leaving marks.
I'm not a woman anymore. I'm a mom. A mom who can't be anything other than a mom because her kid might not live through the year.
She deflated like a popped balloon, her hands leaving my biceps and her head landing with a small thud against my chest.
God, I'm selfish.
I wrapped my arms around her and pulled her in tight. You're not selfish. You're human.
Hair doesn't matter. Not on your legs or on my head. Not when Maisie doesn't even have any. I told you, we get a month of downtime and my brain just runs amok on crap that doesn't matter.
She mumbled the words into my chest. It matters because you matter. You know when you're on an airplane and they tell you to put the oxygen mask on you first before your kids? This is that. If you only put the oxygen on your kid, then you pass out and can't help them. Every once in a while, you have to take a breath, Ella, or you're going to suffocate.
I'm okay. I just needed to get that out.
I know you are, and I can take it. She pulled back an inch and gave me a sexy as hell smirk. What? I was almost afraid of her answer.
Oh, nothing. It just doesn't feel like I'm in the friend zone.
She shrugged. Ah, shit, I was hard, and I'd yanked her right against me. I never said I didn't want you, Ella. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure I said the opposite. Nothing's changed. She blew a long breath out through her lips, moving a strand of blonde hair that had slipped free of her ponytail.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter anyway, hairy legs and all.
You're killing me. I took her hand and turned around, then left the residence with her in tow, winding our way to the front desk where Haley was handling paperwork of some kind.
Haley.
Beckett, she said in a mock serious voice.
Take Ella right now to get her hair cut. Get her a massage, a seaweed bath, or whatever it is you girls like to do. Paint toenails, get new clothes, all of it. You have 5 hours, and then I need her at the courthouse. Can you do that?
Beckett, Ella objected.
Stop, I pleaded. You're giving me the gift of your kids. Let me give you a few hours. And afterward, we'll go out to an actual restaurant with actual menus and no crayons on the table. No lawyers, no kids, just us. And you'll feel as pretty as you always are to me.
Ella, if you don't jump this guy, I will,
Haley stated. Ella silenced her with a glare.
Haley has to work.
I'll handle the phones and guests, I offered.
You will?
Ella scrunched her mouth to the side just like Maisie.
And you won't kill anyone who annoys you?
I will do my best to leave your business intact.
I pulled out my wallet and then handed Haley my credit card.
Don't give this to Ella. She won't use it. Please go make her feel like a woman.
This is going to be so much fun.
Haley skipped out from behind the front desk.
I'll grab my purse and then we'll go.
And I'll keep an eye on the littles,
Ada chimed in, having caught the end of the exchange.
I'll put them to bed too. You kids stay out as long as you like.
She shouted the last part as she walked back toward the kitchen.
Are you sure?
Ella asked me.
God, she was so beautiful.
I took her hand and pulled her into an alcove just off the front hall. You're stunning. You don't need makeup. There has never been a moment since I met you that I saw you as anything less than an incredible, exquisitely beautiful woman. But I understand that you don't feel the way I see you. So, yes, I'm sure.
You're always taking care of me,
she whispered. I gave in to impulse, letting my thumb slide across the soft, flawless skin of her cheek. That's the